This is an ABC podcast.
Warning, strong language alert.
Attention, please. This is the final call.
Bonjour et bienvenue. Burn your passport. I'm Nazim Hussain. I feel the way about travelling that you feel about the worst experience you've ever had while travelling. Travelling is easy when you understand what you're ordering or where the toilet is, which is why I recommend speaking English really loudly and repeating sentences, all right? Nina Iyama understands the subtleties of language and culture a little better than that.
I plan on culturally making up for a lot of things. Like, I don't know how to play piano. I don't know. I don't know how to do calligraphy, but like, I don't know. You know, when I get a break from work, I'm going to become the proper Japanese. You're going to be the...
And Des Bishop is a master of languages.
Passengers are reminded to burn your passport.
I'm here with Des Bishop, New York Irish comedian.
What is your theme again for this? Is international?
So whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, you speak Chinese, and I actually did some gigs in China. I went to Chengdu.
You went to Chengdu, yeah.
Chengdu, Hangzhou.
In Sichuan province. You went to Hangzhou,
Sichuan,
yeah.
And where you Zhejiang. Have hot pots, you get all the hot pots.
That's in Sichuan, yeah. That was in Chengdu. Was your gig in the Bookworm?
Home of the Pandas. Yeah, it was in a bookshop.
Yeah, the Bookworm, yeah.
Yeah, the Bookworm. So
yeah, so there's a really good hot pot place right near there. Is that where you went? About two streets over?
I don't know what a good or bad hot pot is. They all... This is really
well, you like spicy, right?
I like spicy, but I didn't even know if I was having good or bad hot pot.
Well, did your mouth get numb?
Mouth was numb. It was very weird.
Yeah, because that's the peppercorn spicy. So that's mala. If you ever see any of these places that say mala, it means numb. And la is spicy.
Really?
So it's like numb spicy. Yeah. It's peppercorns. So your mouth probably felt like it was tingling while you were eating it.
It was tingling, and I wasn't sure if I was just if I'd eaten it the wrong way.
The first time you eat it, it feels weird, but then when you get into it, baby, I tell you, I'll take you to a couple of mala places
in Melbourne.
Here.
Oh, let's go.
There's loads
mala.
Of them. It's getting really popular. Like mala is just a flavor. There's different types of food that have like the mala, like mala tang is like a kind of a soup, and then there's
mala xiang guo
is soup.
Oh, soup. Okay,
and then. Mala xiang guo is like a hot pot, but like a bowl of incredibly spicy vegetables and meats.
I really like Sichuan food. It's very different to normal Chinese, Han Chinese, whatever you want to call it. When I go to like places overseas, I try to go to like the very local places.
Yeah.
I feel like, I want to eat how local is it, which is obviously that's a real touristy thing to do, isn't it?
Well, yes and no, because a lot of the tourists don't go to where the locals eat because they're afraid of getting sick.
Yeah, well, or afraid of just, getting sick or not knowing what's going on. So I went to some marketplace, and then this is where I could say, these are definitely locals, probably very poor locals as well. So I was like, maybe this is not where I'm supposed to. And I didn't even know how to say a word in Chinese, so
yes.
I just started pointing, so I said that.
What did you get?
I didn't even know what it was, but they were
still
kind of
to
laughing.
This day.
I didn't even know what
they
I
were
ate.
Laughing. Well, they were just laughing because you didn't know how to communicate.
And I was sitting. I don't even know how to eat it. There's just random stuff.
How was it?
It tasted delicious, but I don't even know I don't even know what I was eating.
You were in Chengdu and you were doing it, you're good because Chengdu street food is like some of the best street food in the world.
Oh, it's amazing. So, by the way, if you're listening, Des Bishop is a white guy, by the way, because I heard you speak a lot of Chinese now. And they're probably just assuming incorrectly. I mean, get with the world,
Des Bishop is a white guy.
He's a white
guy. So he's part of that group that does terrible things.
But
white men.
No, but this is the thing. He is not one of those. He's actually, I'm not going to say the exception, but he's a good white guy.
Thank you. It's great to be behind enemy lines and be accepted,
What? So why'd you learn Chinese? What happened?
A quick synopsis of the journey to learning Chinese was... Well, there was a number of different things. So part one was I did this television show many years ago in Ireland about living on minimum wage called the Des Bishop Work Experience.
This is where you worked at a kebab shop. And we actually went there. Me and my wife, we went there.
Yeah, it's chain all over Ireland.
Yeah,
good late night eating place.
And I'm pretty sure we asked the guys and I think they all kind of remembered. It's because you got into like a fight with some people there.
Well, yeah, at the end I challenged.
There's a bit of a spoiler alert.
Yeah, at the end of the thing I just sort of challenged. Mm. A bit of the behavior.
He became a bit of a national hero in Ireland.
Well, that was a big series.
Can I tell you how it was described to me? And maybe it's become something else that it wasn't.
Okay.
But apparently, at the end of the season, you got to see how people who worked on minimum wage were treated by ordinary members of the public.
Yes.
And you, not being a person who lives off minimum wage, were so outraged You stood up on the table, on the kebab making table.
Well, I didn't stand up on the table. I stood over these guys.
This is how it's
talked
to me. You stood up over the thing, and you had your hands in the air, and you made this big inspirational speech about how everyone should be treated equally, how these people are disgusting for talking down to them.
You've changed it a little bit. Actually, what I told them was, why do you guys leave your crap everywhere?
I mean,
you know, like, why are you guys so slow?
What a humble rendition.
I was basically saying that in other parts of the world, like people in a fast food place, yeah, people would take their tray and just like, you know, like dump some of the stuff. And they're like, that's your job. You'll get paid to pick up our crap, you know? And I don't know what the language restriction is here, but
there's no language restriction.
Oh, there is no like, yeah. So it was like, that's your fucking job. You'll get paid to clean up our rubbish. That's your fucking job. Right? It was pretty intense. They were like all up in my face. Oh. But, you know, it was good. Yeah, it was just good telly because the reason why it was good telly was because we had seen a half hour of footage of people being abusive to these Chinese people. Then when you just threw a little bit of abuse back, it was like, how dare you tell me to where I put my fucking rubbish?
Well, not a lot of people know Des, and you know, they probably think he's, you are a nice guy, but you're also a very fiercely loyal friend. One of the first times we hung out was in Sydney. I don't know if you remember this. We were, as you, me, Jason Byrne, Amir Rahman, and Beck Sutherland, like basically our kind of comedy festival crew.
Yes.
And I can't remember where we were. We were
at the after bar, after party in the Metro.
Yeah. And then what was going on? Some guy was being a little rude to, was it me or to Armin or something like that?
I think they were rude to you.
Yeah, rude to me.
The bartender made some comment, right?
Yeah, made some comment. And then he looked at you, he said something. And then you kind of grabbed him and you said, listen, man, I'm not like other comedians. I'll fucking kill you.
I didn't grab him. You always exaggerate. I did not grab him.
Did you say it like that?
No, I did say it. I pointed at him. I said, listen, but I'm not like these other fucking comedians. I'll fucking kill you.
No one has ever stood up for me like that. I was like, wow, man, that was a moment.
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't about you. It was just a way for me to put my anger somewhere. You know, oh, man, I wish he would have called you like a fucking, like a sin,
like
you
a
know,
like, driver
yeah, I would have been, then I would have had a real reason. Anyway. Then I would have gotten the paper, like, comedian stands up for,
you would have sold heaps of tickets.
Yeah, yeah, Islamophobia is unacceptable. I'm kidding, bro.
No, it was great though. But
I'm kidding, Islamophobia is totally understandable.
Sometimes I think that, but.
No, I'm kidding, man. I have a bit about Islamophobia on my show this year.
You've worked with people at a kebab shop. You're down with the brothers. You've worked at a kebab shop. That's all the cred you need. You go down to the mosque, you tell them that, mate, star treatment.
That's right. Have you heard about intermittent fasting?
No.
I'm sure Muslims, you know, this is the fad diet now. It's like intermittent fasting.
No,
I'm sure
way.
Muslims are going, this is Ramadan.
This
what
is
the
bullshit.
Fuck?
We do it one month a year. Yeah. That's pretty intermittent.
Yeah, this is bullshit. Yeah, we don't do it so that we get fucking good abs for Instagram.
So,
but the reason why I brought that up was because I worked with a lot of Chinese people on that episode particularly, and I became very close with them, and I went to visit them in 2004, got a real sort of like, just a bit of an obsession with China. It's such a different culture. In the interim, my neighborhood where I grew up in New York, Flushing, Queens, had become very Chinese. Every time I was back visiting my parents, it was all my Chinese neighbors, couldn't really communicate with them properly, and I just really wanted to learn the Chinese language.
Or you want them to learn the language.
Well, anyway. Yeah, but there's just, you know, that you could say that, you know?
I don't
know
if I can.
This is our country. You speak our language. You know? If you don't like it, go back to where you came from.
Or I'll learn the language.
Yeah. So, go back to where you came from and manufacture our shit for cheap so one day Donald Trump can hate you. But anyway, all that brought up like a desire to learn Chinese. So then in 2007, I made this television series about learning the Gaelic language, which went really well, you know, like trying to learn Gaelic to do stand-up. And when all that was done, I decided to pitch the idea that I would move to China and learn Chinese to do stand-up in Chinese as just a good, fun, lighthearted series about what is this incredibly important country like, really, because you don't see a lot of good portrayals of China. And I wasn't going to try to make propaganda about how great China was, but I wasn't going to just do the usual, like, pollution, the government is shit,
a lot of people,
human rights, a lot of people. Yeah, I was going to try to push it. You know, I basically wanted to make something about the Chinese people. A travel production company came to me and said, we'd like to do some travel stuff with you. And I said, well, I'm not really interested in that. But what I would be interested in is you guys taking on my China idea because I've sort of hit a brick wall.
Yeah.
So that company, we got some money. So from 2008 to 2013, I was trying to get it off the ground. So February 2013, I flew to China.
I mean, to be honest, in those 5 years, you could have just learned it online.
Yeah, but I had to wait, you see, because the I could have. But the journey is from nothing to something. You know, in hindsight, You know, the nothing to something was way more interesting with the Irish language than it was with Chinese. The journey of me learning Gaelic was really interesting to Irish people. Mm-hmm. The journey of learning Chinese is actually not that interesting. Now, that didn't affect the series, but what I did realize was I probably didn't have to wait. I probably could have learned quite a bit of Chinese and it wouldn't have affected the series because at the end of the day, it was the journey of understanding them and their culture to make them laugh.
What was it like? You were like the one white guy in the village that could speak Chinese?
Speak Mandarin. Yeah, I mean, Mandarin is like Putonghua, it's like the national dialect, you know? It's funny how in the West people get really hung up. It's like, you mean Mandarin? Do you mean Mandarin? It's like, whatever. Like, that's right. The national dialect. Okay. Like, you know, you could also say Chinese, you know, like Zhongwen. Right. Zhongwen is just Chinese. Putonghua is Mandarin. I speak Putonghua. I speak Mandarin. Yeah,
Which is the main language.
Yeah, Mandarin is just like like the accepted dialect of the nation, you know?
Right.
I wasn't the only white guy for most of my trip. I was in Beijing where there was a lot of white guys.
Yeah.
But then, you know, at times I ventured off into like smaller places. And then obviously I did one episode was focused on my time as working in a restaurant in a smaller sort of what they call like a third tier city.
Uh-huh.
Small, like 1.3 million. which is a factual joke, that these third tier cities are usually between sort of like 700,000 and 1.3 million.
Wow. So how was it being a waiter at a restaurant?
Well, I wasn't a waiter. My Chinese was like nowhere near good enough to be a waiter because you have to take these orders and write down the thing. No, I was a yinbing yuan. I was a welcomer.
What did
you do?
I was
a greeter at the door.
So when people walk in, what would you do?
Shout at them.
Huan yin guan lin. What does that mean?
It means you're welcome.
So when people walk in, you just go...
You shout. Now, you see, when you were in China, did you not notice that sometimes you walk into a restaurant and there's usually like three or four women standing there, like dressed in a uniform?
Mm.
And when you walk in, they go, Huan yin guan lin. Yeah, that's a yin bing.
So that was you. That was
that's
your job.
That's a welcomer, yeah.
Hey, that's
that was literally
job.
All I had to do. And then every now and then I would like... You know, if something needed to be done, I would do it.
Do people find it a little bit weird, locals, when they walk in and they see you saying that? I mean, maybe I've got to get over this myself, but did they find that a little bit bizarre? Did they ever make fun of you?
I mean, it was bizarre all day, every day. I mean, every single day, I would say, Huan yin guan ling, and the customers would be like, whoa, you know, the Chinese is so good. No, like literally. Like, you know, Chinese is so good. So, yeah, I have a joke about this in my show, you know? So I would say, Huan yin guan lin, and they'd be like, yeah, Chinese is so good. And I'd be like, you know, why don't you speak Chinese if my Chinese is good? Maybe not English. But that in Melbourne, that happens so much.
So what, they mock your...
No, they just praise you. They're praising you. They're very excited that you can do it. But particularly because in Melbourne, a lot of the Chinese here, particularly the younger Chinese, they can speak English.
Mm.
So I speak Chinese with them and they react in English. They always go like, oh, this is so good. So the other day I did my show and I'm actually doing this routine again because I have like a lot of new bits in the middle of it. And so these Irish girls were at the show. After the show, they came down and they wanted a picture. So as they asked for a picture, there was some Chinese people passing. So I said, here, I'll get the Chinese to take their picture. So I said in Chinese, like, 你能帮我们吗? And then they were like, oh, your Chinese is so good. Right in front of the Irish girls, they were dying. The other joke from that bit, which totally happened, and it's not on camera, the guys, when they're doing it, but it's on camera, me being annoyed. And, you know, it's just a routine now, but I was actually genuinely annoyed at the time. So one of the days I did a Huan Ying Wenling, these two drunken guys walked in, and like the arrogant Chinese, I don't know how to describe it, but they're like, they're more annoying.
Next level.
Yeah, they're really rude.
And you're a New Yorker.
So I go, Huan Ying Wenling. And then one of them goes, Huan Ying Wenling, like in front of everybody. You know, in front of the girls, and the girls laughed. You know, the girls that I work with, they laughed at me.
Aww.
So I'm like losing face all over the place. I was not happy. So that's where the routine I say is like, yo, you can't Huan Ying Guan Ling me, because if I was in Australia and I walked into the Chinese restaurant and the welcomer was like, oh, you're very welcome. And I went, oh, you're very welcome. Oh, you're so welcome to my restaurant. Like, I'd be arrested, you know? So it's unacceptable the other way around. But of course, it's fine, you know, because I'm a novelty. When it gets past the novelty factor, it would be a problem, you know? Like, you know, it's very interesting. Like, China has welcomes foreigners in the sense that, like, they're a novelty. But the thought of, like, having a large immigrant population.
Like multiculturalism.
Yeah, multicultural, or even just like a large, any group for labor. Because obviously they rely on their own Nongmin, their own rural population, are actually the people that are doing all the jobs that immigrants do in the
Making
West.
Making the iPhones,
right?
And stuff.
Yeah, so they don't need immigrants the way that we do, right?
Right.
But I think they would struggle big time. The Chinese, the concept of the foreigner not just being there as like a novelty or to like help out a little bit, but actually becoming part of Chinese society. I think they would struggle with that.
Would you live there?
I mean, I loved living there. I stayed another year. Yeah. I was supposed to leave after 1 year, but I stayed another year.
Your
I could totally
overstayed.
Live there. I really loved it. Uh-huh. Like, I loved the lifestyle, the chaos. You know, the Chinese people, they make a joke like, China is chaotic, it's a mess, it's disgusting, it's dirty, but you're never bored. The West is orderly, clean, boring as fuck.
My mom's in Sri Lanka. She's been there, she was supposed to be there for a month. She's been there 6 months now. She's like, oh yeah, I'm coming. But she just loves the chaos and just the craziness.
Yeah, yeah, well, I loved
bribing and stuff like that.
I mean, I didn't have to do any of that, but I did love the chaos.
Can you bribe over there?
Well, you know, Xi Jinping has cracked down a lot on that type of corruption.
Oh, really?
But I believe that there was. But no, I had no scenario where I would need to bribe. I guess, for example, like we were making a TV show. Yeah. So we had the CARFT is the organization that follows Western media who are doing projects in China.
Uh-huh.
So we had a guy, Chen, he followed us around all the time.
Yeah.
But eventually he got comfortable with what we were doing. So he stopped following us around. But I guess there might have been a time where if we were going to do something a bit contentious, like maybe a bit controversial, that we might be able to say, Chen, hey, listen, man, you might just want to go around the corner. Here's $500 and we're going to film, you know, this group of Tibetans about to set themselves on fire, you know, or whatever, whatever you're not supposed to film.
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much coming in, Des.
Instagram is at Des Bishop. Let's just push that.
Yeah, get at with Des Instagram, Bishop.
I want some Instagram friends.
He loves direct messages.
I love to slip into my DMs. Slide into my DMs?
Slide into my DMs. Slip and slide. Yeah. Get in there.
Many cultures will understand miming for directions to a train station. But for the questions that don't come off so well in physical performance, we need talking with your mouth. Tony Edwards from El Patio Spanish Language School teaches people how to talk in languages other than English.
Pretty much just Spanish. And why do you think people come to you to learn Spanish? If, you know, Spanish seems to be this cool language that people are learning these days because, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, it's a real sexy language.
Yeah. You ask me why?
Do people come to you kind of admitting that?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
People have, you know, like they've gotten into the music, sort of like your Ricky Martin or your Enrique Iglesias sort of songs and stuff.
What's a line in an Enrique song that's going to help us if we're out and about in a Spanish-speaking country? No, what about Bailamos? When the river take you over, bailamos. I mean, bailamos is the only Spanish word. I don't even know if that's a...
I reckon that sounds great.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I mean, I understand most of that sentence except for bailamos. What does that mean?
Bailamos?
Yeah.
Let's dance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he's basically just singing dance. Yeah. I mean, who cares? It's catchy. We don't even know what he's saying.
It doesn't matter. It sounds sexy.
Oh, give us a sexy phrase. Say something ordinary, but in Spanish, no doubt. Like, how do you say, can I use your toilet, please, in Spanish?
¿Me puede decir dónde está el servicio, por favor?
Oh, my God. This has become a very different podcast now. We're going to need a rating for this. Now, here's one of my favourite comedians on the Australian circuit, Nina Oyama.
So you were born and raised in Sydney.
Yes.
In a pretty trendy area, eh? Or a bit of a...
Yeah, it's like I was born on the North Shore, which if you live in Sydney, it's quite a nice area. But my parents, in their defence, they weren't like rich people. They kind of just lucked into a nice area when it was still a bit dodgy. Like,
in their defence, they were just trying to raise a family in a good area.
Yeah, they literally were like, oh, this house is fine. We have a baby about to pop out. Let me just like get this thing done. Like, I think that's how my parents, you know, just chose everything. They're just like, oh, we just got to do it at some point.
When did they get in there?
93. I think the same year I was born, 93. Like, it was pretty hectic. Like, my dad knocked up my mum in Japan. I don't think I'm allowed to say this. I really hope they're not listening.
They're big listeners.
Yeah, they're massive Burn Your Passport fans. So that's why they don't travel. But anyway, so yeah, she got knocked up and then she was like, well, I'm not having a kid in Japan. And so they were like, fine, we'll move to Sydney. But my dad also hadn't seen Australia. He no idea what he was getting into. So he was like, is it cool if you just live with your mum for a little while and I will go on my motorbike and travel the whole country of Australia?
What?
Yeah, that's what he did for the whole time my mum was pregnant. And then he came back and he was a dad.
So your mum got knocked up and then your dad just went on a trip around Australia by himself.
Well, yeah, because he kind of hadn't left Japan really. He just kind of was I've never been to Australia. I've never seen anything. So if you can just live with your mum for a little while, I'm going to jump on my motorbike and just see the country for 9 months.
But how old was he?
He was 30.
And you were just born?
And I was about to be born. I was in my mum's tummy. Yeah.
So your dad during the whole pregnancy was just away?
Yeah, he was just he went to Uluru and took some pictures there and just on a bike.
Anyway, so your dad traveled out. So you were born in this culture of just people who love to just travel.
Yeah, my parents do like traveling, but we don't, because we're not well off. Mm. We haven't traveled. I think as a family, we went overseas maybe 3 times.
Oh, yeah.
To Japan, pretty mm-hmm. much. Every time we went was to visit Japan.
But is it really a holiday when you're going back to the motherland? You're just seeing family, aren't you?
I guess so, but it's kind of I've never. So I feel terrible because I feel culturally I'm not that Japanese. I was raised, I had to go to Japanese school every weekend and mm-hmm. learn the language, but actually I'm not very proficient.
Can you speak Japanese?
No, not at all.
Oh, really?
I can speak year 8 Japanese. I can be where's the bathroom? Oh. You know, I can say to people, this is what I can do. I can speak enough Japanese that white people think that I'm fluent. Usually if I speak to another Japanese person, I say in Japanese, I say hi, are you Japanese? I'm half Japanese. My dad's Japanese. Anyway, that's all the Japanese I can speak. Let's switch to English.
And that's a long enough conversation to impress a non-Japanese person.
Oh, completely. They're so convinced. They're I didn't know you spoke the language. Yeah. I'm it's just a secret that I have. But I just, I know.
I'm totally the same. I was born and raised in Australia and I can, I got the Sri Lankan face, a very Australian voice, but I can only say a few things, how's it going? And even then, if I say it in Sri Lanka, people literally stop on the street, look at me, and either are very confused, that face doesn't equal that voice, or they just laugh at me. It's imagine if there was a white guy speaking in a Sri Lankan accent but broken English, a real Oka guy. That's kind of how it is with me over there. I don't know if it's the same with you, but they don't get it more than we don't get, you know.
Yeah, that would be so confusing. It would be like a bad comedian, impression of a... that's what I think. If I saw a white guy doing a Sri Lankan accent, I'd be like, this is not the comedy night I signed up to watch.
Like Apu from The Simpsons. An Indian looking character voiced by a white guy doing an Indian accent.
Yeah, doing a bad caricature Indian. Of an Indian accent. So
which is us when we go back to our parents' countries.
It completely is.
It's
pretty sad. I should learn to.
Well, you know what? I enrolled into Tamil classes to try and learn Tamil. Because basically, my parents split when I was 6. And I don't know what your parents' defense is, but mine is that my mum raised us single handedly. So it's apparently hard to teach 2 languages when you're 1 person. So she, is what she said, she just gave up when we were 6, 7. I don't even know when she gave. I just remember the word for come here. I'm going to hit you, which is injiva. Anyway, but I enrolled into Tamil school because I felt like such a coconut. And then...
Wait, is a coconut white on the...
Inside
and brown on the... Yes. Okay.
I think for the Asian equivalent is...
Banana
or golden coconut.
Oh, what? I've never heard of golden coconut.
Yeah, golden coconut.
I've heard of egg, which is when you're white on the outside and yellow on the inside, if you're a weebo.
Eggs are really funny because... There's an egg in a good way, Des Bishop. He's a comedian. He speaks fluent Chinese. But when he speaks, it really confuses me. When he speaks Chinese, I can't get it out of my head that this is just a white guy making fun of Chinese people, even though he's actually speaking proper Chinese.
It is surreal.
Yeah.
I think I'm okay when white people know how to speak Mandarin. Properly. I don't know why. Yeah, Kevin Rudd. I'm good on
you. Yeah, respect.
But there's something really weird, like, maybe it's because I'm not Mandarin, but, like, when people, white people speak Japanese, I'm like, are you fetishizing my culture? Like, it's really weird. And because, like, white people and Japanese people have this weird relationship where, like, Japanese people, like, you know, like, Nazis love Japanese people.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, and, like, white supremacists think Japan is really good because it's, like, the purest...
It is, like, weird.
...race, yeah.
Similar to when white people speak Thai, because you just associate white people in Thailand with sex tourism.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, this is a bit uncomfortable.
What's your motivation?
Like, well, yeah, exactly. It's like, why are you...
I know some white people that speak Arabic, and I always just think that they're spies or that they work for the government or they're just trying to, like, rat out terrorist cells. And I don't know why I don't try.
Oh, that's so interesting. I'd feel the opposite. I feel so much... People that speak Arabic and Mandarin, I'm like, have so much respect because I'm just like, you're just out there making business deals and, like, being a gun. Because they're, like, the... I think they're the most spoken languages in the world or...
Which one? Oh, as in, like, Arabic and Chinese.
Chinese after English. So that's, like, a very...
Yeah, you get so many deals at the markets and stuff as well.
Yeah.
You speak Arabic and Chinese.
Yeah. You get heaps cheap, I don't know...
Kebabs.
What do they have in Turkey? Yeah, kebabs. Oh, my God. Kofta? Is that Turkish? Probably not.
No, they all kind of... They all claim it. Like, if you were to learn a language now, what language would you learn?
I'd probably learn Japanese, just so I could back myself, hey, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So if that, so you have to... That's like a necessity language.
Yeah, to me, that's like a necessity... Yeah, it's one that I... Like, I plan on learning it. But
yeah,
then
you're
like,
culturally
I
in a deficit at the moment.
I know, like... But I also... I plan on culturally making up for a lot of things. Like, I don't know how to play piano, but, like, I should. Like... I don't know. Don't know how to do calligraphy, but, like, I don't know. You know, when I get a break from work, I'm going to become the proper Japanese.
You're
going to be the,
but that, you know, I think that's actually a thing. So so we're second generation. Some people say it's first generation, whatever. First or second generation. When your parents come from overseas, they're like proper Japanese people. They come here, then they birth us, so whatever we're called, first or second generation.
I think we're called first generation as well.
Okay, so we're first generation. So they're whatever the hell generation. What are they called?
They're also first generation. It's very confusing. Oh. I learned about it in a play written by Michelle Law called Single Asian Female. And, like, I didn't know this. And then they explained it. And they're like, it's really confusing. And I was like,
oh, so we're both first generation.
We're both first generation.
Okay. All right. So our generation, whatever we are, like the kids of the people from overseas, I reckon we become now, at this age, like we try to overcompensate. So we become like hyper ethnic. And then the next generation, they don't give a shit, I think.
Yeah, I think. Oh, I think it.
They become like properly Australian,
fully Aussie,
fully Aussie, mate.
Yeah, I think it like depends on how you were raised though, because I think like a lot of my friends that were raised, because I went to a selective high school, which meant it was like, yeah. So, I'm just bragging. Oh, really? Wait, were you? Are you Sydney, Melbourne?
No, Melbourne High. Oh, it's nice. Not being elitist. We're allowed to be proud, Nina. We just did our homework and, you know,
we were really smart when we were 12 and since then have, like, failed our lives. It's fine. My school had, like, quite a high immigrant population, specifically of Chinese-speaking people.
Yeah.
And I don't know if yours was the same.
Well, this is how we described it at school. One-third Asian, one-third curry, one-third Skip. And then they were like...
What's Skip?
Just white guys.
Yeah, so my school was so Chinese that there was a front page spread on the Sydney Morning Herald about how Chinese my school was.
Okay.
My school was like used to fuel, like, what's the word? Used to fearmonger, basically. Like,
why hysteria? Evidence. I swear to God, the same thing, probably in the same article even, the front page of The Age had an article that said, white flight, because white people were a minority at my old school.
Same. Did they all sit together? Like, we had a white group.
Well, they were like, it was the bench crew, and they used to sit at the bench. I mean, we all got along.
Crew.
Yeah, the bench crew. They used to sit at the bench and just talk about sport and stuff.
Well, yeah, we had the white group, and we just called them the white group, but they were kind of like the last people to get stuff. Like, I don't know. This is really dumb.
Really dumb?
No, they weren't dumb. They were smart. But they were just like there would be things that went around the year, just like certain trends, and they would always be the last to get
it. But once they got it, they appropriated
the fucking loudest.
And then they said they came up with it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey,
like,
two of our white producers are looking at me.
It's classic white people. It was like, what's the word, a microcosm of the actual world. But, yeah, it was pretty cool. Like, trends would always start with, like, Koreans.
Uh-huh.
Korean's like so trendy. They would start the trend.
Well, you know, if you know you're fashionable, if you can shop at like, no joke, I'm not just saying this because you're on the podcast right now. Japanese fashion and maybe Korean fashion, but I reckon if you can comfortably wear Japanese clothes, I can only wear one of like one item of clothing at a time. But if you can dress fully kind of in Japanese or Korean inspired fashion, you're actually very fashion. Like, I think you're the most fashionable person on the street because always fashion forward.
It is. They're so fashion forward and they always wear like multi-layered stuff.
Lots of zips.
Yeah. That's so impressive. I can't do that. I like don't even think I can fit into Japanese clothes. Like, I'd be like an extra large in
women's. I'm actually a large in Japanese clothes. So,
they're so small.
Well, actually, genetically, I'm fully Sri Lankan, but I'm huge over there. So the food or something here in Australia makes you really big.
Yeah, I'm big in Japan. I'm huge when I go over there as well, like compared to everyone else.
Hey, thanks, Dina, for coming on. Where can we catch you or see your stuff?
On Tonightly.
Hey.
Season 1.2. Now a reporter on the show for season 1.2. So I'm going to do some fun on-screen stuff.
Watch out Tom Ballard.
Yeah, I'm taking a job. And also, I'm making a TV show called The Angus Project. You can watch the web series on ABC iView right now. And it's about a guy with cerebral palsy who just parties really hard with the help of his carer, who's absolutely useless. It's based on my real life. My real best friend has cerebral palsy.
No way.
And I am absolutely useless. So it's really funny. It's a good comedy and it's been picked up for a pilot. So
that is amazing.
Watch out. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Nene Oyama. Catch you later.
Thank you, Nazim. See you later.
Attention, please. This is the final call. This has been Burn Your Passport for another episode. And look, even if you don't burn your passport, just do me a favour and just treat it really badly for a while, would you? Hey, you can listen to all the episodes. Just go back on your podcast app. If you want to hear the future episodes that we've recorded but we haven't released, go to the ABC mainframe login. It's a secret password, but it's basically it's at ABC. Password is Michelle. Is journalist 783. Okay, and they're all lowercase.
Passengers are reminded to burn your passport.